For an even better way to listen to Football Weekly at home, at work or on the go, head to soundcloud.com/Guardian Football Weekly or download the SoundCloud app for Android and iPhone.
Football Weekly Extra.
Today, internationals. Far up the clichometer, it's England in San Marino. Let's see. Bank clerks and electricians await their day in the sun. No, that's the FA Cup. Picturesque football minnows for whom even a goal would be a victory. Oh, no, that's Scotland. Random hill in Italy where the only question is how many? Aha! We preview the big action from the Stadio Olimpico in San Marino. An England squad, of course, featuring Les Ferdinand after Rio's backtrack. And we ask, what exactly is a World Cup qualifier doing here? Elsewhere, there's a full global update. Sid dials in with news on Spain, rigged awards, blood bags, and Spain-Finland. And we count down to Croatia-Serbia. Jonathan Wilson, who'd have a great nose for a story if pulsing jars of crackling synapses had noses, is on the spot. All that, plus Blackburn, can't Wenger's mind their own plucking business for once, posts, tweets, and more in today's Football Weekly Extra. Listeners, International Week. International Week. Greg Bukowski, International Week.
I'm excited.
Barry.
I'm beside myself.
You certainly are. Well, actually, you're not, but Owen Gibson is.
Yeah.
Oh. Hi, Owen.
Hello there.
Hey.
International Week.
Woof. Oh, James Malloy says, international pods always worry me. Everyone sounds on the verge of giving up. What's he talking about, Barry?
I have no idea.
Wow.
There are no white flags being raised in here.
Absolutely, absolutely.
As Dido once sang.
Exactly. Very much a nice reference. Good. Well, you know, England. That's very much job one on my to-do list. England.
England, have they got enough defenders to beat San Marino?
Well, have they got enough defenders to beat San Marino? Is Michael Carrick being drafted in as a...
Michael Carrick looks like being drafted, who's been one of the better midfielders in the Premier League this year, so it looks like he's been drafted in as an emergency defender, which is perhaps odd logic, but they've got very little else. I mean, of the original four central defenders in the squad, only one of them was first choice for his club, Gary Cahill, who was then promptly injured,
right,
and they had to call in Steven Taylor from Newcastle. So we're not exactly well blessed in the centre back department. After, you know, it used to be the one part of the team that you could rely on, didn't it?
But then against a team who kind of conceded 16 goals so far, you don't really need defenders against San Marino, do you?
That's the San Marino game, the Montenegro game, where England have unhappy precedents, is a rather different affair. And of course, this all brings us back to the extraordinary events surrounding Rio Ferdinand's recall to the England team. And then his subsequent backtracking, that's one thing his back can do, is his track.
As well as fly to Qatar, apparently.
And now he flies to Qatar. So basically, timeline here, Roy calls him back, he says yes, Ferguson says yes, he'll be joining up. Then a couple of days later, he says, oh no, actually, I had this pre-planned programme to stick around and sort my back out.
Detailed and intricate pre-planned programme.
Oh, yeah, pick your exactly. button, right. Which involved getting an overnight flight to Qatar to earn big bucks commentating on the game.
But apparently that's pre-planned downtime.
Ah, yes.
He's off to Qatar, and he said haters are going to hate.
Haters going to hate.
Haters going to hate.
Yes, they are.
A name going to call him names. Clown would be one.
Yeah. No? Well, I don't. The haters aren't. Well, haters are going to hate, but I think, you know, I don't hate him. I'm just slightly sceptical of his explanation for
slightly
pulling out of the squad.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter in the cosmic scheme of things. It's an interesting story to have in a quiet week. A friend of mine said to me yesterday, you could send Crawley Town to play San Marino and they'd beat them, you know.
Well, it's a big shout there, isn't it?
I don't think it is. I think Crawley Town would hammer San Marino.
What do you think, Greg? Crawley Town, San Marino?
2-1. Crawley, yeah.
Really?
Only 2-1?
They make a game of it, though. Mm-hmm. Owen?
Yeah, might struggle against Montenegro, though, which is more of the
right. Okay.
But we're not allowed to talk England about Montenegro because we need that for Monday.
Got to keep that in the bank for Monday, yeah. Okay. Is this kind of game... I mean, I know that the Germans are always making these kind of noises about teams they shouldn't have to play, etc., etc. But stopping the season to play completely meaningless games like this, because it is a meaningless game, isn't it, Greg? It's not even for the colour.
Well, no, it's meaningless, but then, you need to allow teams to compete. You can't be so elitist.
But hang on, in football, you are elitist. That's the whole point of leagues. I'm not saying they can't compete, but they just compete in a relevant arena.
They're in a qualifying league, and then they go, well, fair enough, yeah. But, I mean, this is the way football is run now, isn't it?
Can't we have, like,
you might have Gibraltar there soon as well.
Absolutely. Can we not have a kind of secondary competition, much as the Europa League to the world?
to the Champions League, where the World Cup could have its own secondary cup tournament.
The thing for those countries, though, I mean, they obviously get huge amounts of money every time they play England, and the argument is that it helps them develop as footballing nations, etc.
But it hasn't done much for San Marino.
It hasn't over the years, no, really, it's fair to say.
Yeah, then did these games exist?
Luxembourg, on the other hand, they used to get spanked, and look at them now.
Jimbo, to tell the likes of Liechtenstein or San Marino or Scotland that they're not allowed to play international football? I think it's very unfair.
Right, well,
but then
it was you that said Scotland, Barry. It was you that said Scotland.
They take them too. Maybe the nation's take them too seriously as well. I mean, you're talking about there's a lack of defenders for this game, and I mean, you could experiment in a game like this, and yet they never do. They're too frightened. Too Hodgson said he might play Carrick at centre back, but only if they're struggling to break San Marino down. I mean, start with a team full of forwards and midfielders, because they're not going to attack you.
When Steve Staunton was manager of the Republic of Ireland, he famously said San Marino are a very difficult team to break down.
Oh, there you go.
So Roy Hodgson
is right to be cautious. Remember having difficulty with Andorra, breaking Andorra down over there in Barcelona. So, you know, just saying. Well, plenty of interesting things about these two matches, but mainly ones that we'll have to bring into Monday's show. So we'll move on from England then, because there's lots of other big games going on around the British Isles, you know, those islands that are not necessarily British but form part of that archipelago. Wales-Scotland, for example, a bottom-of-the-table clash in Group A. Strachan's first competitive match, all sorts of interesting points about this. Of course, he won his debut that 1-0 against Estonia. High hopes here, Owen?
Well, there seems to be rather marginally higher hopes than there have been previously for Scotland, because at least they've got a manager that the large majority of the population seem to willing to get behind. So, you know, high hopes, new manager, etc. Probably won't last very long.
He's selected a squad that looks a little, you know, I mean, you don't have to go far to have a more expansive looking squad than Craig Levein put out, because, I mean, his football was very defensive, to say the least. But, I mean, he's got, like, Naismith, Maloney, Snodgrass, McKay Stevens, Chris Commons, Dorans in there. I mean, he's likely to have a go at Wales, and he can do as well, because, I mean, Scotland have pretty much got no hope already. They're on 2 points. The two teams at the top are both on 10 already. I mean, Wales are only on 3 points, so I mean, it's probably he's almost got nothing to lose already. So I mean, it'd be interesting to see how he goes in.
He's coming at quite a good juncture, really, isn't he? Yeah. He knows he's on to a loser this whole qualifying campaign, so he can take a look at his players. He can try and at least play a slightly more attacking style than Levein, which again, as you say, won't be hard. So
and he could field a striker.
Indeed, yeah, revolutionary.
This is a worrying match for Tottenham Hotspur fans, because it sees Charlie Adam and Gareth Bale renew hostilities. There's a long-standing grudge between those, because Adam has knacked Gareth Bale on two different occasions with nasty little tackles, and they don't seem to like each other very much.
All right, Gareth Bale should be fit, say reports, despite not training with the squad since they got together. Chris Coleman has only won 2 of his 7 games in charge. I think that's all we've got on Scotland-Wales. I was surprised we had that much, actually.
Exactly, thought you pretty well.
Serbia have slightly more important matters to worry about than Scotland before that game.
They've got Croatia. Yeah. And, very, very shortly, we'll be talking about that. Now, part two. Never mind the England-San Marino, says Kazar 49. How about Croatia-Serbia going on this Friday? Well, it's true. Huge game this. These two teams lying second and third behind Belgium in their group. And Serbia, who are 6 points behind, desperately need a win against a nation that they had a major conflict with not so very long ago. And, well, it's absolutely huge. Now, asks Kazar 49, is there any chance you could get Jonathan Wilson to discuss this? As it happens, on the line right now, from outside Sinisa Mihalovic's old house in Vukovar, is JW himself. Jonathan, am I right?
Yes, that's exactly what I am doing.
Wow.
It's up for sale, actually.
Is it? Is it?
So if anybody wants to buy Fisher Mihalovic's old house, it's quite nice. It's been rebuilt since the war was destroyed after the conflict, or during the conflict, I guess. But yeah, it's all rebuilt. It's standing on a very windy, windswept, rainy street in Vukovar.
I just
interviewed his old history teacher and his first ever coach.
Right.
And then they were saying that they knew he was talented, but the thing that really stood out was his willpower and his competitiveness. And that they had more talented kids, but he had the drive to actually make it count.
Right.
Jonathan, Mihailovic has said that he would give up 3 years of his life to play in this match on Friday. Is that enough? Would you give up more?
Well, I mean, his statement is slightly contradictory, and I guess he's putting it in a fairly difficult position. That on the one hand, he's saying things like that and saying one of the reasons he took the Serbia job was for this game. And on the other hand, he's saying, oh, no, it's just another game. It's just like playing Belgium. And I guess he has a sort of duty to play it down, as the match has been doing as well. But at the same time, everybody knows it's way more than a normal game. And it looks incredibly unlikely Serbia are going to qualify for the World Cup. You know, they're 6 points behind Belgium and Croatia at the moment. So even if they win, they have to beat Croatia again in Belgrade. And I don't think they're likely to win, to be honest. But yeah, if they could, say, get 4 points off them, that would kind of legitimise the whole process. It would be seen as a huge positive. So yeah, it's like any derby. It sort of stands outside the competition it's in and clearly does mean more.
Mm. Croatia have lost just once in 47 qualifiers on home soil.
Yeah, and lost to Sweden, bizarrely. Theo Walker's got a hat-trick, so that's how rare an event it is. That's the kind of magic it takes. So, I mean, yeah, the stadium will be packed. There'll be no away fans there. I imagine it'll be a very intense atmosphere. Although the police have said that with any nationalistic chanting at all, they will stop the game, which I don't see how that can possibly happen. But there is a deliberate effort on the part of the authorities to sort of dampen everything down. But I imagine the atmosphere will be incredibly passionate. And to be honest, Croatia is a better team than Serbia. I think it's very difficult for Serbia to get anything out of this.
You mentioned no away fans. The Serbian Ministry of Foreign Affairs have prohibited their own citizens to attend the match. What do you think the atmosphere is going to be like then?
Well, I mean, very one-sided, which I guess makes it a slightly odd atmosphere. Clearly, there'll be a lot of Croatian backing for them. The only slight doubt to that, and I suspect it won't make a huge difference, but if things start to go badly on the pitch, there is certainly a section of Croatian fans who are pretty disaffected with the FA. Zdravko Mamic, who's influenced over the FA, is enormous. He's been arrested recently. There's lots of things going on behind the scenes. So I don't think it's quite as simple as kind of, it's going to be 100% fury pro-Croatia. I think it's slightly more nuanced than that, but, clearly no away fans in the Maximilian Stadium with a great atmosphere anyway. It's going to be loud, it's going to be noisy, it's going to be very difficult for Serbia.
You're in Vukovar, and then you're heading down to Zagreb, what, tomorrow?
Yeah, I assume you're asking why I'm in Vukovar when the game's in Zagreb. I'm not going to the game, bizarrely. I've got myself double booked. I've got to go back to Oxford for the Oxford Litany Festival tomorrow night, where I'm doing a talk at 6 o'clock.
Right,
so,
on what,
I was a bit manic this week. I was in Milan yesterday.
Right.
So, yeah, just
why were you in Milan, Jonathan? I'll tee you up here just so you can have a little crow and a brag.
Oh, it's funny you should ask that, but I didn't want to talk about it, but now you've brought it up, I was picking up an award.
An award, Jonathan?
Italian Football Book of the Year.
Congratulations.
The Pyramid, was it?
Preventing the Pyramid. The Italian edition came out last year.
Oh, very well done.
So I was sitting next to Ferran Torriano, the CEO of Manchester City, who got an award for a book on the business of football that he's written. On the other side of him was Mr. Albertini. Galliani was there. It was full of sort of the great and good of Italian football. And I did a very halting two-line acceptance speech in Italian, which James Horncastle talked me through.
Right.
I said it was a great honour because Italy is a land of that's very, very important in the history of football tactics.
Did you bring your own coffee to Milan, Jonathan?
No, I didn't. I trusted them to do it themselves, and they've done it excellently.
All right, then. All right, well, listen, your call ahead of Croatia-Serbia?
I think Croatia will win it by 2 goals.
Jonathan Wilson, well, how about that? Award-winning Jonathan Wilson, building us up for that extraordinary Croatia Serbia game. Now, Barry, also this weekend, how about Republic of Ireland taking on Sweden? Sweden, the team that did England 4-2 with that incredible Ibrahimovic hat-trick. The team that roared back from 4 goals down against Germany. How worried are you about this one?
I'm hugely unconfident.
Right.
Altogether. There's a bit of palaver over the usual palaver surrounding.
Is it about the roof?
The roof, yes. The roof is going to be closed for the game.
It is.
Yes.
Yeah, because it's minus 10 degrees.
And it's also frozen, so apparently it's too dangerous to open it.
The roof is frozen.
Yeah, there's like icicles and stuff, and they could fall down Omen style.
Could make things a bit more interesting.
Or Final Destination style and spear someone down below or something. I don't know.
Right.
But Ireland don't want it closed. They want it open. But I think the weather is probably going to be the least of the, or the humidity in a closed stadium would be the least of the worries, as long as Zlatan Ibrahimovic is fit.
Maybe they wanted the match called off, and that's why they didn't want to.
Right, right.
Why do they want it open? Just because they think it's hot.
Trapp wants a ruthless performance from his boy, presumably. But only the 67th time that little joke's crept into the podcast. But is it not something to do with their eardrums?
Their eardrums?
Their eardrums, Barry, yes.
It's the pressure, is it?
No, the noise apparently reverberates around.
All right. Well, I thought it was to do with the humidity of the stadium.
That's a better explanation.
Close. Apparently, it's sort of like tropically hot in there and steamy and nasty. But I don't think it really matters. I fully expect Ireland to get beaten. Everything's going like clockwork as usual. Trapattoni's fallen out with a player this time. Kevin Doyle, mild-mannered Kevin Doyle, who, you know, it's difficult to imagine anyone falling out with him. He seems a lovely, lovely bloke. He's always stuck up for Trapp in the past, but he was left out of this squad and issued a statement yesterday voicing his displeasure at his omission because he was only told by text message.
All right. Which top striker have they called in place of Kevin Doyle?
Conor Salmon.
Really?
Yeah. But he won't start. It'll probably be John Walters and Robbie Keane up
Robbie
front.
Keane!
And Robbie Keane will be the first name down the team sheet. He should not be playing. He's not good enough anymore.
All right. Now, of course, top of that group are Germany, who will be facing Kazakhstan, who will have a point to prove, I imagine, pinned up on their dressing room before the game, or with the interview Jogi Löw gave to Kicker magazine, where he said, "I doubt it makes sporting sense for major European nations to play against minnows like Kazakhstan, Andorra, San Marino, or the Faroe Islands." Typical German arrogance. Really? where these people get off? Kazakhstan have got 1 point from 12 so far. There you go. Northern Ireland. What about them, Barry?
What about
Ireland?
They've got no chance, have they, against Russia?
Yeah, playing Russia.
Yeah, Russia have scored 8, conceded none so far. Top of the group, maximum points. They're going to struggle. Although, I mean, they did well away at Portugal, but can't see them.
Busy night. Ahoy for Roy Carroll, who's of Olympiakos, Greek champions in Olympiakos. He's back in goal. There you go.
Where is that game?
It's at Windsor Park.
See, there's always... Northern Ireland aren't very good, as we know, but...
At home,
they are always capable of a huge upset. And this could be the one.
All right, then.
The best game in that group is Israel-Portugal anyway, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, they're both on 7 points, both joint second place. Mm-hmm. But Portugal haven't been playing particularly well the last few games. I mean, they drew with Northern Ireland. They got beat by Russia. Israel have won the last two, although, admittedly, they were against Luxembourg. But it's in Israel, this game. So, I mean, if Israel were to go and beat Portugal, they could leave Portugal really struggling to qualify. Cristiano et al.
All right. There you go, see? No white flags being waved here in the face of international football. Good on you, Greg. Best thing about these weeks, though, surely, is all the players going away to their respective international training camps and coming out with all the stuff they really wanted to say back at home. There's been a bumper crop this week, Barry.
Luis Suarez. He gave an interview, which doesn't seem to have been in any way contentious, in my opinion.
Depends which paper you read it in, I suspect.
Well, I just read what he said, and he said he's very happy at Liverpool, but he would be open to offers from teams who can offer him Champions League football and presumably more money. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Greg's a Liverpool fan. Do you find that upsetting or treacherous?
It's just the way it's reported. It's so boring. Yeah. Wherever Luis Suarez goes, he's followed by the question, are you going to be at Liverpool next season? And I mean, he can only give that answer. I mean, I don't know, just you can't give answers that are absolute, can you? Because, you know, you might not be at Liverpool next season beyond...
And then that'll be thrown back in his face, and also we don't know what the translation was and all the rest of it.
It's just so boring. Like,
sometimes what they say gets misreported, either accidentally or willfully, usually willfully, or else they genuinely are aggrieved and they say something contentious and then claim that it was lost in translation.
What about Yaya Toure and his deal by Saturday or I'm off ultimatum?
That sounds potentially more to it than
that's more interesting.
Yeah. That was a bit of a shocker, wasn't it? No, I thought so.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, he's a very important player for them, isn't he?
Isn't he the second most highest paid player in the Premier League already?
Ooh.
Something like 200. Is he on 200,000 a week or more than that even?
But I'm not sure they're speaking from. He's not exactly speaking from a position of. I mean, he's played well again this year, but Man City generally have been you know, a bit on the slide.
Yeah, very much so. All right.
Wasn't it his agent who said this? Oh, not actually him.
Well, yeah, but what's his agent doing?
Well, I know his agent speaks on his behalf, but his agent could well have spoken out of turn without Yaya's permission.
Yeah, but that's
permission.
Why people have agents, so they can say stuff like that and then...
I know, yes, I'm aware of that, yeah. Or if you ask, you know, a footballer or a TV and podcast presenter, you know, to help you out with some charity gig you're doing and they don't want to do it, they'll say, oh, ask my agent, yeah, should be no problem. Your agent is basically a deflector shield.
Yeah.
Unless yeah. Maybe it's been misreported, it's actually Colo Torre.
Yeah. That'd be funnier. Again, quite possible.
He wants to move to, yeah. to a bigger car dealership for more money.
Now, plenty of other. That was the story of the season, was it not? Just refresh our memories about that one, Barry.
Well, it transpired that Colo Torre was misbehaving on the domestic front. With a woman who he had told he was a car salesman.
A very successful car yeah. salesman. Yeah.
I don't know why you do. I can imagine a car salesman telling some woman he's a professional footballer with right. Manchester City, but for a professional... Is that like
The secret dream?
The secret dream of professional footballer.
To live a normal life, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Magnificent. Well, anyway, now a quick roundup on some other stuff. Italy are taking on Brazil... Thursday evening in Switzerland, of course. So their plane got struck by lightning on the way in to Geneva. Yeah.
Who's?
The Italians.
Bloody hell.
I don't know what that means, but a lot of excitement
Will
there.
Will they all have supernatural powers
then? Yeah, quite possibly. Quite possibly. Or they'll get targeted by falling icicles one by one. I don't know. Anyway, then the Brazilians take on Russia at Stamford Bridge on Monday.
Of course they do. The natural place for the Brazilians.
Exactly, and we'll have Fernando Duarte, who's currently embedded in the Brazilian side, in a very real sense.
Along with 400 other Brazilian journalists.
No, Owen. what else? You were a big game for Netherlands, who are 100% so far. They're in Estonia. New Zealand. New Zealand could wrap up. Oceania's intercontinental playoff spot if they can get at least a draw with New Caledonia. And if they do wrap that up, they'll probably be facing Jamaica, who are fourth right now in CONCACAF. Also in CONCACAF news, crunch game for Jurgen Klinsmann. The United States, they're taking on Costa Rica at Dick's Sporting Goods Arena in Denver, where I'm hoping they've got the roof on because there's snow all over the place and freezing temperatures, apparently. And not quite as frosty, though, as relations within the USA dressing room, where several key players have called out Klinsy for his tactics and preparation. How about that? Apparently, if he gets this game wrong, it could be goodbyesville.
Well, I hope New Zealand qualify, because they were a jolly nice camp in South Africa.
Were they?
Yeah.
Well, they had a historic World Cup, didn't they?
They did, yeah. And by playing incredibly defensively, but yeah, fair play.
Yeah, they out Italy. Italy,
they did.
One, yeah, quite a shocker that one. And then the United States take on Mexico in Mexico on Tuesday. How about that all? Good. That's enough of that international business, except for the Spanish, only the reigning world and European champions. We'll hear about them from Sid after this. Now, Sid Lowe in Spain.
Hello.
Hello. We're having a big international party here. What are you bringing to it?
Can I be a poser?
Yes, please.
I think I might be bringing the biggest international game of this break, mightn't I?
Spain-Finland. All right, then. Let's hear about it.
Spain-Finland in Gijón, followed by France-Spain in Paris.
Wow, that's big.
France drew at the Bernabeu. No, they didn't draw at the Bernabeu. They drew at the Calderon, which means that there's a reasonably strong chance that Spain will be forced into the playoffs to qualify for the World Cup. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe this is the first time that FIFA have made it so that the World Cup winners don't automatically qualify, and they're already in a situation where arguably the best international team of all time might not make it.
Anyone want to correct Sid on that?
But Sid, Spain are top of the group.
Yeah, but they go to Paris, and they've lost the potential advantage over France by drawing with them at home.
Yeah,
that's a very pessimistic view you have.
Yeah, of course, but it's also the view that, of course, has to prevail at the moment in Spain, and this is the really big game, although Del Bosque has been trying really hard to reinforce to everyone, hang on, there's Finland first.
Mm. Of course, Del Bosque there, Spain have the massive advantage of being managed by the FIFA Manager of the Year. Or is he, Sid? Is he?
Yeah, of course he is.
Well, hang on a second. Isn't scandal erupting in the corridors of Zurich, etc., etc.? Jose Mourinho arguing that the vote was rigged.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm going to be fair. Let's be fair to Mourinho. Mourinho doesn't use the word rigged or fraud or scandal or anything like that, although he does imply it quite heavily. He says that one, two, three or more people phoned him to say, hey, I voted for you, and my vote seems to have been calculated for someone else. Now, let's say for argument's sake that that's completely true, that three or four people did vote for Mourinho and their vote's been calculated for Del Bosque. Del Bosque got, I think it's 34%, Mourinho got 20%, so I don't think it quite, quite explains that.
Sid, yeah. What Mourinho said is that three or four people have contacted him. He's not saying that he has been through every single person and three or four people.
No, of course, exactly. Yeah. And nor is he saying it's necessarily a fraud, but he's letting idea float.
When he said, I didn't go to the awards because it's rigged, how did he not use the word rigged? What word did he use then?
He didn't use the word rigged.
What did he say?
He said, I spoke to one, two or three people who said they voted for me, but the vote went for someone else and someone else won.
Their vote was assigned to somebody else,
And that is why I didn't go. He doesn't, as I say, he implies very heavily, but he doesn't actually say it was rigged. And it's worth pointing something out, by the way. That argument that Mourinho uses is complete bollocks.
Why?
Because, he says, I didn't go because of that, right? Yeah. Even if those people did try and vote for him and somehow ended up accidentally or by fraud or whatever it was voting for Del Bosque, they could not have known that until after the award, which is when the list of votes are produced. So that cannot be the reason why he didn't go.
Yeah, he might know that.
It can be a retrospective reason, but it cannot be the reason why he didn't go. And in the build-up to it, he said, no, I'm not going because I've got work to do.
Right.
Well, so which of his two excuses is it?
Well, that's very much the question, isn't it?
The reason he didn't go is because he didn't win.
Right. Okay, well, that seems to clear that up then. In other bombshell news,
haven't cleared anything up, to be honest. But yeah. I mean,
what about Fuentes?
It's depressing, really.
What about Fuentes threatening to plea bargain the names of footballers? Is that going to happen, Sid?
I'm sorry to ruin another story. I don't know if it'll happen, but I suspect it won't. Fuentes, throughout this entire trial, and I don't know how closely it's been followed in England. I know that there has been some stuff on it, but Fuentes, throughout this entire trial, has come out of court virtually every day and kind of flirted with journalists and kind of left there the little idea that, oh, maybe I could say this and, oh, maybe I could say that. And in the first day in court, he offered to tell the judge. And judge just said, no, don't worry about it. And all the way through this, he's been playing this kind of either very funny or deeply, deeply, deeply cynical game where he kind of floats the idea. It's the equivalent of the little kid going, I've got a secret that no one knows, but I'm not going to tell you. I mean, it's been the whole case, I think, has been a real disgrace and a real shambles from start to finish. But I suspect that Fuentes won't, unless, as you say, at some stage there comes some need for plea bargaining. But I think the problem is that it's very, very likely that there won't be a need for any plea bargaining.
Right.
He's like Dr. Nick Riviera off The Simpsons, isn't he? Hi, everybody.
Well, I mean, if you read some of the stories that have come out, like things like blood bags being carried in a Coca-Cola freeze box and stuff like that, he is Dr. Nick Riviera. And I say the crux of this is a legal case, and this has been one of the big frustrating things from a sporting cheating point of view, is that actually the sporting cheating side of it sort of doesn't matter. That's kind of a byproduct of this, and it's a legal case about public health. So it's about the practices he's used rather than whether he helped people win. Although, of course, that all feeds into this whole thing. And doping wasn't a crime. Of course, it was a sporting what's the word? I suppose a sporting crime. Crime's probably not the right word, but it was cheating in sporting terms. But it wasn't a legal crime at that stage. So he's on trial for something different. I suppose it's Al Capone being done for tax evasion, isn't it?
Very good analogy, Sid. Back to the football, though. How pessimistic are you that Spain are actually going to end up in second place in this group?
I think they're good enough to go to Paris and win. So I suppose I'm not that pessimistic. I'm also not that pessimistic in the sense that. I think if they do get to playoffs, they'll probably win it anyway.
All right. Well, you've got France taking on Georgia in the meantime with Paul Pogba and of course, Real Madrid's Raphael Varane in the French side now.
Can I chuck a French thing in?
Chuck
very
a French thing in.
Yeah, have you seen the National Front have said that Benzema shouldn't be allowed to play because he won't sing the Marseillaise?
I haven't seen that, no.
Obviously, I'm sure we've been through this before with various muppets saying that England players should be obliged to sing the national anthem. Well, this has gone a step further, but, you know, it's It's the front nationality.
National anthems are a very touchy issue. It's not just kind of ethnic backgrounds that set people off on this. I remember in Italy it was a debate for years and years and years about why
I wouldn't sing the English national anthem.
You wouldn't, no.
No, I mean, I'm a Republican, so I don't...
Oh, okay.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. I wouldn't sing the English national anthem, but it wouldn't. If I was any good at football, it wouldn't make me any less likely to want to play for England.
Right, that's
or less likely,
Craig,
to give everything playing for England.
Right, but you would actually take a stance of not singing this completely symbolic.
Yeah,
it's basically a hymn to England.
I wouldn't sing it partly because I'm crap at singing.
If it's a different national anthem, something that celebrated something I strongly believe in, and fair enough, but I don't think anyone should have to sing a national anthem, particularly if you don't believe in it.
Yeah. If you don't want to sing, whatever your reason. I find it a bit bizarre.
Barry.
Well, Sinisa Mihailovic kicked someone off the Serbian team for not singing the national anthem. They were Muslim, or still are Muslim. But he's apparently going to have to bow to pressure now to bring them back because the player in question, Mladic, I think it is too good to not be in the side.
Oh, well, I see.
That'll really work in terms of the internal relationship in the dressing room. Right? A manager who's forced to bring a player back.
What is it about the anthem that he objected to? Was there some ethical content that the...
I suspect the Serbian national anthem probably isn't the most Muslim-friendly ditty in the world, but I don't know the details of it.
All right, then. Fascinating stuff.
We on the radio last night, we had Del Bosque as a guest and saying, unfortunately, this is a problem the Spanish never had.
Sid Lowe, whose maximum sentence is anything but 2.5 years. In a good way. Barry, we've almost come to the end of our international roundup, which is a shame. So I'm just wondering if there's something else you can throw at us, like a little end of credits reprise or something?
Off the top of my head, in Asia, I noticed that Uzbekistan are a point clear in the top of Group A. It's two groups there, 4.5 places up for grabs.
And one of them being the playoff?
Australia
are in that thing, aren't they? Australia, they're looking good for an Asian playoff spot.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I know.
They did, yeah.
Uzbekistan are the leaders of Group A, listeners won't need me to tell them, of course, that they won last year's FIFA Fair Play League.
Right, they won't need
to tell
them that. Which
is better than any trophy.
But not for the reasons you're thinking. Yeah. Anyway, good.
Oh, right. And anyone who's interested in South Africa, where Didier Drogba has been left out of the Ivory Coast squad.
Really?
We don't know whether he asked to be left out or was just dropped, but him and a few other players. So it's the Ivory Coast old guard, the golden generation.
The golden generation that didn't come up to scratch again. In
Jonathan Wilson.
Elephant's graveyard. In a real sense. Yeah.
Jonathan Wilson has a good article up on the site about that, if anyone wants to read it.
Jonathan Wilson, he gets around. Now, all sorts of other things on the domestic front. I've got some posts and tweets quickly. Here's Punk Anderson. We were talking about Everton Man City. He says, he or she says, I find it kind of odd that Jelovic's goal and Morales' disallowed effort were discussed as being best strike in the Everton game. Osman, anyone? It's true. I don't know how we missed that. It's an absolutely astonishing goal. Fair cop. Evil Loundrier, fess up, James, you took that pirate joke from the Season 3 SpongeBob SquarePants episode Crabborg, didn't you? As if. I did, all right. Charles Waz says, this is related, actually. Who are AC Jimbo and the rest of the Football Weekly team's comedy heroes? I mean, who's your comedy hero?
Comedy heroes.
Yeah, when you're working up a funny line on the FA and the community.
Or the latest, the Financial Fair Play.
Yeah.
Who do I bring to mind?
McIntyre, isn't it?
It's like the Farce Show.
Really? Yeah, there you go.
That's very good.
All right, Greg? Barry.
Is it
Barry,
well? I'm not sure it's aged well, but I did like it.
Greg?
I like Louis C.K.
Really? Yeah, I've never seen him at work, actually.
Haven't you? He's quite harsh, yeah.
My desert island comedy thing would be Seinfeld box set.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. Good.
Actually, speaking of which, Cole Latoure pretending to be Carlson. George Costanza has pretended to be a lot of things to impress women. Importer, exporter, marine biologist, dentist, I think, and something else.
Mm.
Have you ever pretended to be somebody other than a...
I once pretended to be a jockey.
Mm. Did you?
Yeah.
The size of your body. Well, are you about 6 foot two?
I'm 6 foot one. Well, I wasn't 14 and a half stone at the time.
Although, as I learnt at Cheltenham last week, jockeys are getting taller.
Are they?
So, yeah, that's seen younger jockeys are taller.
Jump jockeys, you could get away with being a 6 foot jump jockey.
Right.
Of course, I also pretend to be a journalist on a daily basis. I'll get that in before any of the listeners do.
All right. Well, we were talking about, we were asking about, is there a Football Weekly out there doing under research comments about English football? Nicer One posts in, I think the current podcast has that market cornered. No need for Scottish. lots of people posting in with what they said were great goals. Simpliskins with a couple of crackers from Motherwell Hibs. Hey. Ecology says overhead kick from Samaras in the Celtic game. I didn't see it.
I heard about it. All right.
I did see the Ellis Harrison for Bristol Rovers against Rochdale one, which Johnny Five Eyes describes as the best goal of the weekend anywhere in the world. It's quite messy.
There's one we had yesterday on the site by a Greek player.
Quite a bold claim.
It is a bold claim.
Yeah, there's one we had yesterday on the site. I think it's by a Greek player. See that volley? Absolutely. Stunk.
Samaras, was it?
No.
I think Samaras was last minute as well, which sort of gives it extra
sparkle. Right. What happened in yours, Greg?
It's about 35 yards out, and the ball just got headed out of a corner, and this fella absolutely banged it as hard as you like into the top corner. So if he was Greek, then Samaras wasn't the best Greek player's volley.
Did he volley
it? His goal was a devalue.
It was a proper volley. It didn't bounce.
It wasn't as good as Stankovic's colossal halfway.
I haven't seen that.
No, I'm sure you have, Greg.
Have I?
It's only the greatest goal of all time.
No, do you mean this weekend?
No, not this weekend.
I thought you were saying this weekend.
No.
Okay, no, it's probably not as good as that, yes. Yeah. And I have seen that.
All right, then.
Now that we see 200 great goals a day on the internet, I wonder if it's slightly devalues the great goal, does it?
Does it just raise the bar?
Maybe it does. Maybe it does.
I still think Simon Cox is that famous one he got for Swindon Town. That's the greatest goal I've ever seen.
Mm. I'm trying to think what happened.
The ball punted from deep, sort of bounced right in front of him without breaking stride. He just buried it from about.
Wait, no, it didn't. He didn't bounce in front of him. What happened was it came. The ball was kicked out from the goalkeeper. It came over his head. His first touch knocked it up without it even hitting the floor. To set his second touch up, which he then volleyed over the goalkeeper.
He chip volleys it.
He doesn't even bounce. Yeah. He controls it with one touch without it bouncing.
Right.
Flicks it up, then runs onto his own touch
and without breaking stride.
So the ball doesn't touch the ground.
How many legs has he got?
He was in a plane that got hit by lightning.
That's amazing. Yeah. Producer Ben says he's going to put a hyperlink. There you go. All right. Now, the elephant in the room, of course, is Blackburn Rovers. We've avoided discussing it, but let's get our Rovers on. Mr. Gareth E., wholehearted congratulations to Blackburn for livening up a quiet international break with another sacking. Surely now Phil Brown will get the nod. Charlie Wake, says Charlie Wake, imagine if Zamperini hired Michael Appleton for Palermo. That's a great shout. Zamperini's made 5 managerial changes this year, but sorry, up your game. Because they're on 6 at Rovers now.
Well, wherever Appleton ends up next, the fans are probably going to worry, aren't they, if you look at his last 3 clubs.
Yeah.
But it's extraordinary, isn't
Hopefully it'll be Chelsea in the FA Cup for Rafa, and then he could manage 4 FA Cup teams.
Well, with Appleton's CV, I mean, maybe Stamford Bridge is the ideal
perhaps
location.
So.
But it's extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, kind of in a week when we were all kind of talking about hoax stories from one part of the football world, what's going on at Blackburn is actually more bonkers than most things you could make up, you know. And that's true. You've got Blackburn, you've got Leeds as well, where there's all kinds of shenanigans. Clearly the facts speak for themselves. There's no what they're doing to a once great club is fairly criminal. They're losing the fans as well. I think that's the interesting thing. Sort of average attendances have gone down by 10,000 since they took over, which can't be only to do with the fact they've come out of the Premier League.
But I feel really Greg, you're former Blackburn Rovers man yourself. So.
Well, I feel really sorry for the fans because they're in a really awful position because they don't want the club to do badly because you never want your club to do badly. But it's probably the only way Venkies are going to lose interest is if Blackburn do perform badly and become, not worth their while in owning anymore. And that means the fans turning the back on the club, as Owen said, and attendance is going down, which is a real shame.
They're, 4 points off the drop now in the championship?
The 4 points off their relegation places. I mean, I imagine they'll still probably stay up, but I mean, I can only think Venky's got involved in the first place because they were a Premier League club and they wanted to have an association with a brand in the big sparkling Premier League, and now they're in the championship. They're just making some foolish attempts to try and rectify a situation that they've got no knowledge about. They've got no knowledge about the football industry and how best to run a club. And I mean, if you look at Shebby Singh, like he's essentially he's got rid of Appleton because he wanted to bring in Kevin McDonald as manager some months ago. It was rumoured he wanted to bring him in, and alongside a bit part Bollywood actor called, I think he's, what was his name? Judah Nally, yeah. who was in a film called Dan Dana Dan Goal, which is about a team called Southall United who hadn't won a match in 25 years and go on to glory in the Cup. So he probably thought this fella's performance in that film was stunning. You know, he's got to bring him alongside Kevin McDonald because that's surely the way to glory years back to
Blackburn. Must be a made-up character. But, you know, it's extraordinary some of the decisions they've taken. I think, as you say, I mean, I think a lot of these people come into football and think it's going to be easy, you know. Although, ironically, more people probably now know the Venky's name globally because of their mismanagement of Blackburn Rovers, and they say they're sort of steady mid-table Premier League.
They're infamous as opposed to famous, I think, perhaps.
Paul Hayward, formerly of this parish, I saw he described what they're doing as corporate vandalism.
Mm. So, that's a fair way of putting it. There are some suggestions from Rovers fans, though, that although this does seem another hasty decision, Appleton himself wasn't exactly doing a blinder there. Incredibly defensive football, some of the charges laid against him.
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a lot of, if you look at the comments on our blog, there's, you know, quite a lot of Rovers fans are actually saying, yeah, but actually, in pure footballing terms, it's, you know, they can see
it's
a sort
hard,
of rationale.
It's hard to know how good Michael Appleton is because he's around.
He's barely been there.
He's around at clubs, so, you know, for such a short amount of time that you can't really judge him.
Portsmouth fans speak very highly of him, but
I think that one thing that needs to be mentioned about Blackburn is that the Jack Walker Trust has probably got a lot of questions to answer because they decided to sell the club to Venky's in the first place. And in Jack Walker's will, he you know, stipulated that he wanted the Jack Walker Trust to look after the best interests of the club, which clearly wasn't selling the club to Venky's, who were being advised by Jerome Anderson, the agent. I mean, they kind of, you know,
it's only got messier, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they must have known that they were not, you know, this was going to be a bad move. And I imagine they just wanted to get rid of a loss-making business by that point.
And the fact is, you know, for all the speculation that, you know, we all engage in on a daily basis about football clubs changing hands, there aren't that many owners out there for football clubs anymore, particularly of that level. So, you know, you have to look quite hard to find somebody you can pass on to. I mean, Reading were in the same position. I mean, John Majewski said, you know, I've passed the club on to somebody who I think can, you know, kind of, who will have the best interest at heart and all the rest of it, and that remains to be seen. You know, they've been pretty hasty in second manager too.
Blackburn legend Simon Garner said the other day that we've got to the stage where Burnley fans actually pity us rather than, you know, are laughing at us. It's time for change. You know, these people need to go. So,
just on one wider point about ownership, whilst Owen's on, is essentially now, are you just going to get more and more Championship clubs being hijacked by speculative financial companies just because of the fact that the TV revenue in the Premier League is so high, so they can take a gamble on coming in and hoping that a club perhaps gets promoted, in which case they'll become worth a lot more and then they can sell them then?
I think that's exactly right. Yeah.
And is that what's, I mean, I don't know what's happening. Leeds is something other, but I mean, they were bought in December when they still had a hope of being promoted. Now they've fallen away in the league and perhaps don't, and then you're hearing noises about them perhaps being sold already.
Well, the Leeds situation is extraordinary. I mean, if they are looking to flip the club effectively, you know, sort of 3 months after buying it, then that's something we've not even seen before, even in the bizarre world of football finance. But you're absolutely right. I mean, the £5.5 billion TV deal is like a sort of, it's created a magnet for potential speculative buyers around the world, not to look at Premier League clubs now, but to look at the division below and perhaps take a punt on a club they hope will go up.
So to protect the clubs in the Championship, it will be better if more of that money from the Premier League streamed down to those clubs so they're not... so they're not being bought.
Although the Premier League is keen that most of that money goes down in parachute payments rather than being equally distributed. So that's a whole other argument.
How many of the Championship clubs would you include in that category of clubs that have been bought in a speculative fashion to maybe reap the rewards of a Premiership?
Well, I think it's only going to increase from now because the TV deal has gone up to such, you know, gargantuan levels, and the pool of Premier League clubs that you can look at buying. I mean, actually, Premier League ownership is quite stable now. You know, kind of the pool of Premier League clubs you can look at buying has contracted, so therefore there are, you know, they are going to inevitably look down. But I think it's more only over the last sort of year, 18 months that's been the case.
On the subject of Reading, Dave Fowler tweeting, do you think Poyet moving to Reading would be a good move?
No.
Why?
Well, I think he'd be mad to go. I mean, if you look at their fixtures, they don't stand much chance of staying up. Why would he not stay at Brighton to the end of the season and assess his options then? I mean, I know there aren't that many Premier League jobs. I know they don't come up very often. But he's, you know, he's holding all the cards in this case, surely. He's a well-regarded young manager who would probably have the pick of several opportunities, you would have thought, over the next year or two. I think he'd be mad to jump at this first one that comes along.
Hmm. Well, that almost brings us to the end of Football Weekly Extra. But, of course, this week has brought us to the end of Michael Owen's career. Greg Bukowski, would you like to say a few words?
Yeah, well, I played against him once.
Did you?
In one match, yeah. I was playing for Marine against Liverpool's B team, and he was 16, and he was rumoured at the time that he was worth £5 million already, and we were like, wow, this can't be true. And we were the only part-time team in the Lancashire League, as it was then, which is now like the Premier League under-18s or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he played against us in Liverpool, won 3-0, I think, and he scored two goals. And I remember his second goal, it came across to the edge of the penalty area, and he back-heeled it in from about 12 yards. And it was a superb goal, and you could just tell he was a fantastic player. And at that time, he played football with joy, you know, and all this. He looked like he just loved scoring goals. And he looked like that up until, I'd say, the age of 22, 23, when his body started to deteriorate. And I just think Owen was a player who was only relevant when he was scoring goals. And when he wasn't scoring goals, he didn't have that many other assets. And therefore, his career seemed to end, you know, 8 years ago, not at the end of this season.
It felt like a career in two halves.
Yeah. Really.
But what a career up till that half.
Up until that point, he burned really brightly. I think... And what's happened with Owen happens with a lot of players who come through and have played so many games from, you know, the age of 16, 17 when they're professionals, and they burn out so quickly because the bodies can't seem to handle it.
But for you, there'll always be that fresh-faced 16-year-old on a field
in somewhere
on Merseyside with a smile on his face instead of a silly moustache.
Instead of a silly moustache.
He seems to be a real nice guy. He's had a brilliant career, which, you know, was curtailed towards the end by injury, but for all that, he seems to attract an awful lot of hostility, which I really don't understand, because he doesn't deserve it at all.
I can see why, if you're a Newcastle fan, you might have something of a beef against him, because they think that he came there for an awful lot of money and didn't do much, but it wasn't his fault. You know, he was injured a lot.
He doesn't have a monopoly on that, footballers
absolutely.
Going to clubs because they're going to get lots of money.
No, I agree with you. On Twitter and so on, there does seem to be a stream of invective which seems unwarranted. But
it's just the thing is, they have a go at him for being boring, which, you know, it's not a crime to be a bit boring. Like, it's not like he's, you know, I don't know, he's there to entertain everybody on Twitter. He's just on Twitter and says things now and again which aren't very interesting.
Don't we all?
Well, exactly. I'm doing it now.
But he's doing... there's a very good chance he'll have a successful second career as a horse breeder. He's branched into that and has done very well at a couple of horses he's bred have won at Royal Ascot.
Well, he certainly seems to be more into horses than perhaps he's into football these days. You know, kind of like, I'm sure that's partly behind the decision too. You know, kind of that seems to be where his passion lies.
All right then. Well, best of luck to Michael Owen. And that's it for today's Football Weekly Extra. Don't forget, there's a special roundup of the papers ahead of the international break on Friday morning, and then Monday we're back with all the reaction to events in San Marino. I look forward to Montenegro, Fernando Duarte doing his Brazil thing. Many thanks to producer Ben, to Barry, to Owen, and to Greg, and you, listener, most of all to you. Have a lovely weekend.